So welcome to Truth Will Overcome Tyranny podcast with your host David Lopez and Basra Parsons. And we're joined today by Vinny Eastwood, the one and only, who runs his own podcast, The Vinny Eastwood Show, in New Zealand. So he's over across the way there. And please introduce yourself.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Vinny Eastwood from The Vinny Eastwood Show. And I used to be on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, but it's kind of gone down, and I didn't really like the look of any of the other networks, to be honest. So I just kind of went independent and have been doing like 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, basically solo with a guest and whatnot. I do all the editing, I do all the uploading, I do all the videos. I've got more YouTube subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, which is like the New Zealand New York Times-ish kind of thing, and I'm blitzing the living bejesus out of them and the rest of all the other mainstream media that have a presence on YouTube, you know? And yeah. I started doing all this a while back.
It's like seven years.
And I've been doing my show for 3+. And basically I just, got busted for weed, learned that cops weren't, honest, learned that justice wasn't just, became a cannabis activist. And then I started listening to a lot of American talk radio about, all the bunches of scumbaggery that are going on, learned about the New World Order and everything like that. So I listened to a whole lot of Bill Hicks, got into companies and then got really, really well paid as a salesman and stuff like that. But they were all freaking psychopaths. So I took my $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers and I bought myself an iMac and a camera and like a fridge as well. I think we needed a new fridge. And, yeah, I just tried to live off that for a while. Didn't quite work. So I started designing DVDs, started selling them at protests, public meetings. These were the things that I was going out and filming and covering and interviewing the activists. I realized that all the activists, they actually had amazing stories to tell, yeah, right? When they're not restricted.
If they could get their stories told.
Yeah. And when they're not restricted to a soundbite, you'll be surprised the amount of information that comes out of them. Really life-changing information. And because I was kind of the only one doing it, and to most extents actually kind of still am, but in this country anyway.
Yeah.
It has given me a geometric growth in knowledge and networking.
Exponential too, no doubt.
Yeah. Like I'm kind of like the king of Facebook, bro. I'm just getting like heaps of likes on all of the stuff that I'm doing. I'm really deep thinking, man. You know, like I'm not playing around. But the problem is, people sometimes don't get it. They don't get what I'm doing here. Okay, if you're gonna have a few laughs and what have you in the face of tyranny, why not? You know, I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
We've got to, man.
If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right, basically.
Okay, so name me how many talk radio show hosts in this movement that make you laugh your ass off.
Well, there's not many.
Probably, but
you're probably the biggest thing in the Southern Hemisphere in that category.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's something that's absolutely necessary. All right.
Laughter's the best medicine.
Well, the thing is, I only really like doing things that haven't been done before. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it really hasn't been done before. Talking about hardcore conspiracies, talking about child pedophile cults and things like that, and being real with people, yeah, and being very empathetic and very emotional about things and just being a real person on the radio, not getting absorbed by the microphone or the candidacy of whatever fame that you accumulate. It's about these people who you are interviewing, the people who have lived the issues, breathed them, those who have shed blood and lost loved ones as a result of what they know. And if we listen to them, all of them, we realize that everybody's got a story. And if you listen to all those stories, you gain something which you don't normally get. Perspective.
Yep. Certainly. Absolutely. With you on that, Jenny, all the way.
Absolutely. And what's good about a radio show with an empathetic host who actually, you know, gives a damn about what you've got to say is that you give them that long-form, open
platform
for them to explain their case and explain what they've gone through, whereas on the mainstream media, you know, usually it's combative if you know it's against the establishment what the person's saying, and it's usually a manoeuvring of them into sort of just, you know, making them look like kooks or something like that, rather than just letting them have their say.
Have you heard of satanic inversion? Right, you take something that is and you turn it on its head. Okay, the way I figure it, everything's been kind of like under that satanic inversion. That's why every single thing that you get told from an official source about something is basically the opposite of what it is. Vitamins are bad for you. Well, frick, that must be good for me. Vaccines are good for you. They must be frickin' dangerous. Yeah. You know,
it's sort of going that way, isn't it? There's so many things that are the reality is opposite of what they're trying to tell you, and it's just, yeah, it really does pin my head in anyway.
Yeah. So my conclusion to that phenomenon is that all you've got to do in order to make the world better is make those lies real, right?
Yes, yeah. Well, that's what we mean by truth will overcome tyranny. If people actually know the truth about what they're consuming, either in terms of the air that they're breathing or the food that they're consuming or the water or whatever, and those people who are making it so, well, then the tyranny would have a harder time,
manifesting itself, encasing us in its slimy tendrils.
Yeah,
it's all the cockroaches.
It's all about, you know, used car salesmanship style scams, and you know, getting people to believe things that aren't true. And once someone understands a scam, the scam is no longer applicable. You know, it just doesn't work anymore. So that's, you know, where the truth overcome tyranny comes in is, you know, once you understand how a scam works, then you go, oh, well, I know that's a scam. It, you know, it's not going to work on me, buddy. You know, go find another gazelle to sink your teeth into.
Yeah. Well, the whole point of satanic reversion, as I was mentioning earlier, about all you've got to do is just take whatever they're doing right now and just just invert it again, and that way you're turning it right side up. So I looked at the media in this country, the alternative media. I looked for somebody who is doing, like, say, a five-day-a-week radio show or something. There's like, three people who do, like, one day a week here, okay, who talk about the kind of stuff that I do. And, of course, not in the same way, because everybody's got their own personality, their own styles, and their own traumas and suffering, which kind of connotes all of the things and the views that they have on the world. And I saw that there was nothing, right?
Smallish market, just out of the way. How many people in New Zealand these days? Vinny, any idea?
4 million plus, with a million Kiwis living abroad.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. There'd be that in Australia for sure.
Yeah, and a million of Kiwis in Australia. Oh well, you know, there's a whole can of worms that we could open up there. But let's just stick to this. What we were talking about is how you can indeed become the media if you don't like what media is currently there. It's what a lot of people have said, and I decided, you know, it's actually worth doing. I mean, look at it this way: if you have a nation that you love, full of your family, friends, acquaintances, so on and so forth, and you come to the realization one day that all of them and you are going to be killed in some way, shape, or form by the scum that currently own you. If you come to that realization, you best do something about it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree, man. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was same here. Same here. And I was actually activated or reactivated, so to speak, by my time in court. I always spell it now in inverted commas, C-A-U-G-H-T, over a weed matter as well. And it just became an Orwellian nightmare for me to get through this protracted experience of appeasing myself before these people in robes and stuff who told lies to me and to anyone else, very few people that were in the room with us. And yeah, it opened, as you said, such a can of worms that I'm still wound up about it.
Yeah,
sometimes I think that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, David.
I was just say, basically, the prohibition is a crime against humanity. It's a Trojan horse against people's natural rights, and it's disgusting. That was my two cents anyway.
Yeah. I mean, my experience was pretty nasty. Like, I think it was a 19 or whatever, and I just like get up and smoke some weed in the morning, and then all of a sudden there's these cops and a couple of dogs coming up my path.
Jeez. Know? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So I just go, good day, gentlemen. How goes the weather? You know, come on inside. Come on in. Have a look. Have a look around. And here's my baggie full of weed rolled up in foil for you. You know, and here's my personal tin. Here's my pipe. Here's my baggies. Here's the stalks. Here's the other tin foil wrapping that we've got and everything like that. You know. And
totally compliant.
They took my full confession. I go, yes, I've just totally naive, you know, when you think about it. It's just hilarious. I go, well, yes, I have been a drug dealer for about 8 months, selling about an ounce a week, you know. And I've been buying them for about $400, you know, here or there a week, you know, whenever I can get them, et cetera, you
that's
know.
That's greener than the grass you were selling, buddy.
Yeah. It was friggin' hilarious, you know, to look back on. And then they still made evidence up in court against me.
Oh, what?
Oh, they still needed it.
Thanks for your cooperation. Yeah, we're going to add some more charges because we can.
Yeah, they projected it into, oh, he sold $40,000 worth of cannabis in 8 months. What student in freaking Dunedin that's selling an ounce a week makes 40 G's? You know? Well, this is just insane.
That's to accommodate the other part of the system, the media. They've got to have their show bus and their little headlines every few weeks to make this bogus war on drugs, which is all about a war on cannabis, look real.
Yeah. They caught me with 13 grams, bro. And that's an indictable charge, right? 13 grams is less than half an ounce, ladies and gentlemen, for the uninitiated.
My God, I thought it was expensive down under.
Yeah. And then what happened was I go into court and the guy in front of me, he's up for assault. No. Sexual assault, resisting arrest, and growing 5 cannabis plants. Okay. He gets 150 hours community service. I go up, 13 grams of cannabis for sale, 300 hours community service.
Double. Well, yeah, at least...
And I was lucky I didn't go to jail for up to 8 years for a first offence, and there was no diversion available because it was an indictable charge. Like, having that much pot for sale is as serious as manslaughter.
Well, you've got the same sort of anachronistic laws as we've got in Western Australia then, yeah. It's absolutely barbaric, I think, to call these people enlightened beings, so-called judges. Have they not got a brain in the head? Are they not connected to the internet? Huh. Can't they see that cannabis is at the forefront of all cancer cures and so forth? Well, can't they? You know, what's wrong with
that? It's more like the fact that
connection?
They won't look. They won't look. No. And at the end of the day, they're pursuing this law without regard to its cost. What they did to me destroyed my life. The cannabis that I may have sold to any people over that time destroyed nobody's life. It's, you know? I mean...
Yeah, show me the victim.
I mean, now I get panic attacks. That started when during that incident when I was locked in the cell. I never had a panic attack before. And the first one was like... I thought I was going to die or something.
Yeah, apparently they're really bad, yeah.
Yeah, and you have all these people who you think that you're friends and they come around and they buy weed off you and they smoke with you and that kind of thing. And then
you never
see them again. you know?
Yeah.
So you lived all alone in a city that has only been your home for like a year or whatever, and all of your other mates have like gone on summer holiday and break and stuff like that back to where they live, and you're all totally alone, and all of this stuff comes down on you, and it just rips your entire life apart. I had my girlfriend as well, who's in Japan. She gave me $2,000, and I said, oh, I'll just buy some weed with it and sell it, and then somebody stole it all.
Yeah. Yeah, right. The coppers did.
No. Actually,
that was only half a fucking ounce.
But... Well, I got it. It got stolen before I got back. I went away back for a week or two home to my mum's place for like New Year's and stuff. And then when I came back, all of my weed was stolen, and my things were stolen, like my cameras and my friend's stereo and my computers and my stereo, and somebody like rifled through my change jar and everything.
It's still another consequence of prohibition, though, isn't it, really, Benny?
Well, it was my flatmates, right?
And, okay.
The thing is, nobody's going to believe somebody who's like under charge for a crime like drug dealing or something and like actually go after the perpetrators to a degree.
They actually don't care generally when that's the case.
Yeah. Like one of my flatmates actually left in the middle of the night, stole my bag, stole my friend's stereo, and blacked out his name on the tenancy agreement with fucking permanent marker, so that we couldn't get his name off it or anything like that. I knew his name, I knew where his parents lived, and I gave that information to the police because of course he was going home, you know. And three and a half years later, I get a letter from the police saying that they've caught this guy who stole my $4,000 stereo. They caught this guy who stole my $300 backpack. They caught this guy that owed about $1,000 in rent, and they ordered him to pay reparations of $78.
Isn't it hilarious, man? God, they are just so keystone.
$78. Yeah, well, right. That's the thing about the judicial system. For one thing, it operates on presumptions. You know, like they just throw things at you, and you have to defend yourself against it. You have to prove your innocence much of the time. Like the whole, you know, $40,000 in eight weeks or whatever they were saying that you were, you were making without any evidence. So it's, you know, somehow it's upon you to prove that it's not the case, when it should be the other way around. And second, there is no restitution to the victim when there is a victim. You got to go sue and go through all
unless
this.
Unless it's one of their victims and they'll pay out $5 million here to a person and stuff like that.
And usually the costs are awarded by, you know, the taxpayers foot the bill most of the time, especially if a policeman is found to be in the wrong, assaulting people, or, you know, they might go on paid leave. But in the worst case for them, it comes out of the police station budget, which is paid for by the taxpayers. It doesn't come out of the pockets of the perpetrators themselves.
So the victims pay for the trauma of the victimized, and the victimizers get away with it and actually make money off of it. All right. See, sounds about right to me, don't you think?
How does the incentives work there?
Yeah. Well, just imagine for a moment. These are my two principal assumptions of life. If it comes from an official source, like a roll or something like that, it's the direct opposite of whatever they're telling you it is, usually. All right. Yeah. And the second assumption is, if you can't make it in your own kitchen, then it's a soft kill by a weapon.
Right. Yep, fair enough.
I have my own two-phase analysis as well of law, and that is that it is symbolized for the rich by a rubber stamp and for the poor by a taser.
Pretty much. So, The legal system is definitely no good, and you know that's why I'm pretty much an anarchist. You know, I just go, this is crap. You know,
the worst part of it for me, David, is the whole concept is totally foobar, because they're putting all this power and expectation in a person called a judge, whose hands are directly tied by things called statutes, and he can't even make up his own freaking mind because he's got to do it within the confines of this crap called law. This person is never a judge. He's just a conduit for the scam called the law and those people that make the junk that is normally law.
Yeah, they have a conflict of interest. I mean, you shouldn't be judged by someone who derives their income from the state. You know, that isn't impartial. They're going to, in most cases, default to their employer's
point of view.
And then, you know,
it's much the same mechanism by which politicians gain control, isn't it? I was just thinking about this earlier today, actually. We've got this, mayoral kind of scumbaggery going down in Auckland now.
This brown guy.
Yeah. I got a great great protest chant of a brown, the colour of poo. It's Auckland City, not Auckland Zoo.
Nice one.
Nice.
dig this, right? Len Brown was anti pokey machines, all right? Pokey machines are like the little gambling machines where you play the poker and everything on for the uninitiated.
Yeah.
And Len Brown then took a $15,000 donation from Sky City Casino, right?
Yeah.
And then he got a 40 free hotel upgrades from Sky City. And then it's dovetailing. And then Len approved new pokies for Sky City. Like 500 new ones, right?
Wow.
And this dovetails with Sky City's ticket in, ticket out systems, which easily facilitate money laundering. Pay the piper, call the tune. And these people who are like, oh, but you know, if we don't have Len Brown and then some right wing candidate's going to come in. It's like, well, for those who don't want Len gone because someone quote unquote worse would take his place, please remember left wing and right wing candidates generally belong to the same vultures tearing at the soft belly of our fine town.
Absolutely.
General rule of thumb. Look for candidates.
This whole defensive voting thing, you know, I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils. I say, I mean, you're still voting for evil. What are you doing? You know, I mean, I can see why they think that way, but it really is a false paradigm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, as a general rule of thumb, look for candidates with the lowest budgets that say radically different things from the well-funded candidates. Kind of like how most things at the supermarket are poison or nutrient deficient and you need to stick to the outer aisles, you know? Because big or specifically criminal or scumbaggerological businesses is interested in one thing, profits, which means whomsoever funds a political ideology can be assured to be the ones benefiting from the policy set forth, either financially or competitively, by weeding out smaller businesses through compliance costs, licensing, and a whole host of ways that the local council can make the business community's lives harder. They find a puppet, get legislation passed that benefits them. Not exactly rocket science, really, considering the amounts of money being thrown round. And it seems voting is the mechanism by which people accept becoming slaves to the rule of scumbaggery. Yep. So long as there's the appearance of choice, a visage of freedom, people will accept and even fight to defend their servitude.
Oh, look, I keep asking people, still voting? Like, are you going to vote yourself free? Is that your plan? I don't see it happening. You know, you're basically consenting to your abuser, you know, and they're using that vote and saying, well, you know, maybe your team lost or you voted for me, so I have a mandate to abuse you.
Yeah. In fact, somebody shared this picture with me today. If you need violence to enforce your ideas are useless. And I was like, well, what about using violence to defend freedom from oppressors? I mean, for instance, what if instead of doing a peace symbol when thugs in uniform are kettling you, pepper spraying and tasering everyone, the cops got disarmed, captured, handcuffed and held in a hastily built facility for a few hours without charges or torture in full public view so everyone can laugh at them, then released home to their families with the shame of knowing they were bested by their betters? A lot of people throughout history have been exterminated right after governments banned guns. They all had the idea that they didn't really want to get exterminated, but they could not defend themselves because the murderers didn't want violence. Just remember, if you attack, it's called violence. If you defend yourself or your family, it's not violence. That's called self-preservation. It's called freedom.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And, you know, people talk about the line in the sand and, you know, when is it right to resist tyranny and what circumstance and all that kind of thing. all I can really tell you is sometime before the cattle car door closes behind you.
Okay.
That's, you know, at some point before that.
Here's another thing. Determinism. I really, really can't be bothered with it, because who knows what the hell's going to happen tomorrow or the next day or anything like that. I mean, we've got all these long range projections and all these people saying, oh, it's the end of the world that day or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to be practical here. You've got to deal with what's in front of you. So when people are voting for somebody who they know is corrupt, you have to assume that that person actually wants the corruption and ask them to justify why they think corruption is a good thing, why they think we need it, why is it necessary, what kind of corruption is their preference, do they prefer?
Don't you find people go into cognitive dissonance when you approach this angle, though, Benny, quite often, you know, that both are corrupt and why are you bothering and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you get faced with the Stockholm syndrome. You know, people are kind of falling in love with their captors or making excuses for them because they don't want to come to terms with the fact that these people are straight up evil and are going to do bad things to people.
It takes seven different people to say the same thing to you before you begin to accept new information. No one is a lost cause. Trying to wake them up by yourself, however, thinking it'll work, is the lost cause. All right.
Yeah, yourself bargaining with them. That's the problem as well. You know,
It's stupid, bro. Info grenades. Okay, you pull the pin, you chuck it in, then you walk out of the blast radius and hope six other people do the same. All you got to do is just play your part.
Yeah, planting seeds.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, look, I find it really effective too, because I've had friends who are, you know, very caught up in the left-right paradigm. You know, they think all the good people are on the left and all the bad people are on the right, or you know, vice versa. And, you know, I just plant seeds. I just explain, well, you know, this is how I see the paradigm, is basically a load of BS. And, you know, just sort of take them through a few things and then leave them to think about it. And I find that later on they'll come back and ask some more questions, you know, and that's great, because, you know, they have thought about it and it takes hold and then they start to sort of open up to more stuff. Not everyone, but some do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, it's that little drop in the bucket thing. You never know. You might be the one that makes that bucket overflow. You might be the one that comes and says this thing to them and says, and they go, you know what? Six other people have told me that 9/11 was an inside job, and it's like over a couple of years, it's been lingering at my mind. What is nanothermite? What is all this? And then you got them, all right. And then you can start explaining all of this stuff when they're ready, when they see you as a teacher, when you've actually got their respect. Okay, you don't go up to somebody who's never even seen you before or heard of you before in your entire life, dressed in shabby and in a moth-eaten freaking cardigan, and start telling them what they know, what they don't know about the world, do you? And expect to be listened to.
No,
don't want to know about the world. No, that's why I really rate our merchandise, Vinny, by using what they use against us, and that is symbols and symbolism. By the logos and the slogans that we're coming up with and the designs that we'll be putting with them, just by having that seed visually available to someone on public transport or whatever you wear a T-shirt to, or, you know.
Yeah.
And so that can plant that seed. That can be one of those six or seven contacts.
Yep. And then there's memes on Facebook. What I love about the memes, the memery, is that it's a major look type thing. You know, you can't look at it. You've already seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it's all about me. That's why it's spelled meme.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing is I like to focus on the philosophy of liberty and freedom and try and foster that in the culture, because it really is a culture war. The culture is what drives, you know, society in a certain direction.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
I'm just a preacher of the philosophy of scumbaggery.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But there is such a thing as scumbaggery, and anybody who thinks different is just wrong. You know.
I'm just pretty simply against tyranny as well, Vinny.
Yeah. And I see it as this: as you know, there are those who want to be left alone, and there's those who won't leave you alone.
Yeah.
Which one are you? You know, there's who's doing all of this scumbaggery? Well, it's they, them, those that won't leave you alone. You know, can I be left alone? Can I have my own plan for my own life? Can I make my own decisions? Oh, no, someone has to come along and mind me and tell me, you know, what's right and wrong and how to live my life. And they've got it all backwards anyway. So because they just want power over you and they want to skim the cream off everything you make and things like that. It's basically you've got the central plan, as you say, everybody has to be on board with the plan or else you're a bad guy. And then there's, you know, how about I have my own plan? Can I have my own plan? Can I opt out? If I can't opt out, if it's not voluntary, then there's something wrong with it.
Well, this is the way that George Bush put it. Either you're with us or you're with the terrorists.
Yeah, that's the kind of paradigm being put on us, which is, you've got a choice to make. You're either part of the community or you're not, and you're, you know, a spanner that needs to be dealt with.
Hopefully not with a drone.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I fail to see the difference between a drone in the sky and a drone that walks the streets.
Yeah. They're all on autopilot.
Yeah.
Being remote controlled in some way.
It's not even like a sophisticated guidance system, bro.
Wow, that's just as well, I would think, with the intention that's behind them.
There's nobody at the controls, bro. You know, they're just bumbling through life.
Yeah, I need to get my opinion from the media.
Actually, we used to be those people.
Sure.
Yeah, that's for some of us, mate, for sure.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to apologize to everybody who's a slave scum right now. I used to be a slave scum, you know, and I want to be respectful. That's why I call you slave scum and not filth.
Well, at least you give him that, you know. But
some people call people sheeple, you know. Mm. It's like, they're not sheeple, bro. That's offensive. They're slave scum.
I prefer to avoid both terms to tell the truth. Because, like you say, I was pretty naive myself many years back, just 10, say. It's not that long in a life of 53 years. And with respect, I went to... through two universities, graduations, you know, two degrees, so to speak, and then got a third degree afterwards, saying, why can't you get a job? So, I'm sorry, I don't know where I was going with that.
Fair enough. But, there are a lot of people on autopilot. They got a lot on their plate. They're worked to death trying to put food in their family and things like that. And it's difficult to get the luxury to do research and all that stuff. So, yeah, people just switch on the TV. They get their opinions handed to them. The conversation is limited within a certain spectrum. Anything outside of that's not acceptable, and they take that on board, and they kind of outcast those that are outside that tight little conversational paradigm.
And for people like us who've gone through this process, it's a very lonely, frustrating, angry, and depressing time for a lot of us. The people that you think you can love and trust and what have you suddenly think that you're crazy and they stop taking you seriously as a person.
They scorn you.
And everything within your entire life structure of a belief in the way things are also simultaneously gets destroyed. So it's like you're alone.
It's kind of challenging.
It's like you're alone in the void with nothing to hold you.
Yeah.
You know?
Like the running man.
It's worse than that, you know? And a lot of truth, as I theorize, actually couldn't handle the awakening and wind up taking their own life or something or destroying themselves with excessive alcohol. Drug use and alcohol. These kind of things are a reality for people like us. It's not easy. I mean, it's like in Bruce Almighty, where he suddenly knows everything and everybody's praying to him and all of that. It's kind of like that. Every single thing that you look at, about 100 different topics come out. It's like your brain's on overload and everything fucking pisses you. God Dang yep. it! I'm really, really bad with the swearing today.
It's fine. We're not actually broadcasting on any terrestrial radio, so we can get away with it. That's fine.
Oh, okay, that's fantastic then. Fuck shit, piss cock nuts. All right.
Okay, we got him covered now. we've lost everybody.
like a Masonic apron.
Yeah, what? Well, I do like the freedom to express with real language, because FCC regulations that I've been broadcasting under for quite some time have irked my tongue somewhat. Anyway, what was I talking about? Frank. Don't you hate it when that happens?
Talking about the awakening process, which is like process.
And how many facetted it
all right,
is.
Right. So somebody came up to me and they said to me, Vinny, like, what do I do with all this information? Like, now that I've got it, now I've learned stuff and what have you, what do I do? And they go, well, that's step one, is learning what the hell is going on. Mm. Learning that you don't know everything. And step two is coping with it. Step three is finding a way that you personally can contribute to the global effort to making a difference without anybody's help, right? Of your own volition, something to give you your personal power, whatnot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the final step is to implement and make that difference in the world.
Yeah, taking some action is really important. And, you know, there's a few things that I did. You know, one thing was setting up a Facebook page and a website called Australians for Liberty. As I was saying, you know, trying to sort of get the ideas of freedom out there with a sort of a libertarian bent, which seemed the most consistent ideology, you know, based on the non-aggression principle, that just really made sense to me. It's more of an objectivist point of view than
fairly uncommon in Australian politics.
Absolutely, like it's something that the media refers to as privacy advocates or libertarian groups or whatever. Yeah. You know, some fringy fringy people that like to complain about government. And yeah, I wanted to bring that out and express that side of things, and just point out, you know, the creeping statism that's taking over every aspect of people's lives. And then, you know, I opened up, connected with a lot of like-minded people, and my network just boomed. And I met Basra through Facebook as well, because, you know, it's sort of game recognizing game. You know, we're sort of like-minded and onto the same things and understanding the world from a similar perspective. And also a bit of charity. You know, I got involved with the Street Kitchen, which I thought was beautifully anarchist, because it's just a grassroots thing, no forms, no permission. We just set up a table and rescue food from cafes and things and give it to the homeless. And I'm thinking, well, that's something that really
that's
makes
concrete.
A difference. Yeah, that's concrete. That's doing something. And, you know, there's nothing like nothing makes a community more dangerous than empty stomachs, in my opinion. You know, so to make the place safer, you got to have full bellies. And so getting involved in things like that, you know, how could I not meet nice people by doing that as well? So, you know, I opened up my real world friendships with people that I felt were, you know, good and trustworthy and things like that. And what I find really difficult with the awakening and becoming really disillusioned with the way things are was the trust factor. Like, you know, I felt so alone because I couldn't trust people. Who think the state is some wonderful thing that's going to solve our problems and want to get the state involved to solve their problems in their lives, I find it really difficult to trust them, because they outsource violence to get their problem solved. You know, they sit back and make a phone call or petition the government to basically bring a gun into the room to get their way.
Hey, you know, a great New World Order version of Survivor: outwit, outlast, outsource.
Yeah, absolutely, outsource the violence. And you know, if you don't feel that you can deal with people directly to solve problems, you know, if you don't have those social skills, then you're a dangerous person.
I was just thinking about that the other day, actually. It's when you're resisting something, some people believe this new age nonsense that what you resist persists. Okay, well, you know.
I've heard lots of sloganistic babble.
It's like, oh, it rhymes, therefore it's true.
What was that statement again? Sorry, that slogan.
What you resist persists. And, you know, my instant answer to that is that, well, how come I'm not thinking the way that you're doing, even though you're not resisting my reasoning? All right? How come I'm not thinking like you, even though you're not actually trying to make me think like you? If what resists persists, then obviously what you do resist. What you don't resist just suddenly comes crashing down, right? So obviously I'm talking to you right now, Mr. New Ager. What I resist persists. Okay, what I resist persists. Well, hold on a second. When there are like races of people all over the world, every freaking country and every single decade throughout the entirety of history who got exterminated by people that they couldn't resist, okay, and didn't resist. Can you name me a race of peaceful, you know, knowledgeable, loving people and whatnot that refused to resist oppressors or invaders that wasn't exterminated or enslaved? Can you tell me one, please? I would like to see a historical example, and then I'd also like to see reasoning processes that allow anybody to actually overthrow a technologically advanced psychopathic elite with infinite money and infinite scum baggery with doing nothing.
Doormats get walked on. That's simple as that. You know, if you lay down, people are gonna just walk all over you.
I mean, how do you think society's gotten so messed up at this point? Has it been because everybody's been lying down doing nothing, perhaps? And then you tell me what I resist persists.
Everyone's been doing the Ned Flanders Oakley Dokley, you know. Oakley Dokley, if that's what you want.
Go along to get along.
Oh, you've got a badge. You've got a shiny badge, so, you know, I'm just, okay, whatever. Oakley Dokley.
Oh, Master, please show me your badge again. I love being in the presence of a god. Let me bow to you. Oh, Master, yes. I want to be oppressed. I want to lick your boots. Please give me a fine of some kind. I'll do anything you want, Master.
Yeah, it's getting that way that people, you know, feel like they have to turn themselves in for something. You know,
we are indoctrinated from the day we pop out. Quite, you know, honestly. Well, with the pushing forward of the mandatory age of school for children, we've got kids going to school at 3 and 4 and being suspended for misbehavior and kind of shit like that when they weren't even, you know, going to school 20 years ago at 5 and stuff like that. And then we've got television and school. We've got bells and whistles at school. You're sent to a headmaster and so forth. The minute you do wrong and you popped out the end of that, then you've got to go to work. More bells and whistles. If you don't do as the foreman says, you know, you lose your job and then you get nothing and you know, etc. We're fully herded into the mindless mindset that most of us occupied most of our youth.
Yeah, it's, you know, the education system we have is based on the Prussian system, and Prussia was in the 19th century was a military state, and they put that system together to churn out good little obedient Prussian soldiers that were willing to die for the state, and. You know, it's been adapted.
And they had a resounding victory against the French because when they declared war, oh my God, all these recruits that were really obedient and didn't have to be trained all that much in order to walk forward and die were really actually quite easy to recruit because we freaking got them already from childhood.
We crafted their minds to accept it, and they're, you know, children's minds these days are crafted to accept authority as a, you know, as a real thing.
That's part of this indoctrination earlier. The headmaster, the teacher, etc., who supplant the authority of parents actually very early on in that process.
I see prison as a graduate course of high school.
A lot of people do.
Mm-hmm. It's the same deal, isn't it? You know, it's garbage in, garbage out. That's what the society is producing now. All it's producing is all this human waste, okay? I look around all these people when I'm walking around in the streets and what have you, and I see all these different people with all this potential. And I see it squandered, just like on Fight Club, you know? You're just like, oh, my God, everybody's got all the freaking infinite creativity in the universe. They could actually – that person over there could freaking cure cancer for all I know or make an everlasting light bulb or an everlasting gobstopper for all I know. Who knows?
But she's sitting there with a broken ankle because she's got nowhere to sleep.
No, she's just wearing a lot of cancer-causing makeup and drinking aspartame.
All too often.
And fluoride.
Bucket loads of aspartame.
She's on her way to get a vaccine. And then when she gets home, she's going to cook a nice TV dinner for everybody fresh out of the microwave, which will also give them cancer. So basically what we've become is we've become walking cancer-replicating cells.
Yeah, and you know, mindless consumers of the apex of life is to you know, own a lot of stuff, and you know, I'm not against say people you know, doing well and things like that, and owning property and whatnot.
So but, long as I don't get the proceeds through the processes of scumbaggery.
Scumbaggery. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Not being part of a con job to get those things.
Yeah.
And all too often people are compromised. They have to compromise their principles because of whatever profession they choose to join. And,
or see the society they choose to join.
Yeah, and they
I've compromise. I've been offered to join the Freemasons a number of times. I don't do good with authority. You know, you may have noticed.
Oh, mate, I got the same problem. You know, it's like, where does your authority derive from?
I mean, somebody needs to earn my freaking respect.
I am the Grand Master Flash.
Yeah, because I said so doesn't cut it with me at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a classic parental thing. I can't be bothered parenting properly or teaching the child an actual lesson that they'll remember and actually connote some meaning to. I'm just going to say because I said so. Because it'll actually do me more harm than good to explain it to you and give you the understanding of how little power over you I really have.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah, so instead of reason, it's just authority, and the two aren't compatible. I mean, authority is a logical fallacy. You know,
oh, no, authority is not a logical fallacy. Appealing to it as a point of argument is a logical fallacy.
Correct.
Authority is good because it's when the authority has no accountability or responsibility connoted along with it when things go into thing. And like the Lord Acton quote, you're familiar with the "if power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely."
Yeah.
Well, there's a third line in that that most people don't hear about. All great men are inherently evil.
Yes, yes. And there's a great man fallacy that people appeal to with, you know, the big central plan and that kind of thing, which, you know, we need to be saved by a great man to come along and on a, you know, knight in shining armor and all the rest.
Which is ironic because I have a savior complex about me. And I really do. I love helping people. I love saving people's lives, you know.
Sure.
And the thing is, I don't want that power to go to my head. So what I've done is I've made friends with all of basically the most astute scumbaggery exposers worldwide. Mm. So that if heaven forbid I become some form of douchebag, they'll be able to expose me and get me out of the way quick as possible so that I can't do any more damage.
Good strategy. Good strategy. Yeah,
and
that's right. It can
get
to your head.
Fantastic news feed.
Well, you know, you have to sow the seeds of your own destruction to prevent your tree from going out of control and consuming the whole household. You know what I'm saying?
Mm, checks and balances, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, thing is, we all need checks and balances in our lives, just like we need checks and balances with government, because your life is actually a powerful thing, and all power can be misused if the person has the inclination to do so. You know?
But I could do so much good with the Ring of Power.
Oh, yeah. And that's the allure of power. That's the allure of being in the clique, you know. Mm. Like, I was invited into the Kiwi Journalists Association with like 1,500 or so actual freaking professional New Zealand journalists and whatnot. And I asked simple questions like, do you believe that there or have any evidence to the effect that any New Zealand media entity has been infiltrated at some point by foreign or state intelligence? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
90% of the responses are basically calling me names, pointing out a slight grammar mistakes, and a couple of responses have been from much older, perhaps wiser journalists who worked back in the 70s and the 80s when there was a lot of stuff going on. And they've said that South African intelligence was working in the media here during the Springbok tour when everybody was protesting against apartheid.
Yep.
You know? And that British intelligence was here in the 60s when the British Broadcasting Service was just being first brought to New Zealand and we first had our television broadcasts. You know, you know, these are real things. But I got
Mossads everywhere.
I mean, but I got cast out and chastised by this group for asking simple questions that had
That's
answers.
They are the questions they refused to ask, mate.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. If you can't self-deprecate, if you can't see your own flaws, your faults, if you think that you're right all the time, that is when you will start to lean towards the path of scumbaggery, like the dark side. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's an old saying, an old story about...
Sorry, your depth of knowledge is limited by that too. I mean, you can't really learn and progress if you can't take on new information because you already know it all.
Mm-hmm. There's a story of the cosmic schmuck, all right? Dude's sitting there, and he's wondering how he could possibly be the cosmic schmuck. And the answer is, cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot for the uninitiated. And the answer is, if you're sitting there and you've never questioned whether or not you're the cosmic schmuck, you might well be one.
Yeah.
But if you're constantly asking yourself, am I the cosmic schmuck here?
Today?
Then you'll never become it. All right? That's that self-analysis, that self-deprecation.
Yeah, that's right. Self-awareness, others call it.
Yeah, well, I think it's just in general goodness. Good people do that. Bad people don't. I've defined the difference, the key difference in the behavior of a good person and a bad person is a good person defines themselves by what they will refuse to do. And a bad person will define themselves by what they will never restrain themselves from doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And certainly lack of empathy covers a lot of, the good versus bad. Yeah, yeah. That's basically the definition of it, isn't it? If you've got a lack of empathy for others and you're stuck in your little bubble and your own desires, and see those fulfilled at the expense of others, then, you're a sociopath. And that's why I see politicians as a general rule as sociopaths, because they presume that they know what's best for everybody, which is seriously deluded.
Well, they project that.
Yeah. Well, here's what I was going to do. It's election year in New Zealand, so I'm really thinking about this. So if anybody listens to this broadcast and you actually want to give me a hand or with this or what have you, you know, go for your life. But I want to run for office, okay, under the banner Vinnie Eastwood for Prime Minister.
Yeah, and, nice.
You know, big billboards on the side, you know, big cheesy salesman grin. And then I go again to these public meetings and stuff like that, stand up on the podium with what do you want to do for New Zealand's economic future? Well, mostly I want to increase the national debt to record levels, the kinds of which no one has ever been seen before in human history. In fact, you know what I want to do? I want to borrow more money in my first year in office than all previous New Zealand prime ministers combined. That's what I want to do for the economy. It'll be great. I'll get to flog off all the national assets for pennies on the dollar to financial interests that have basically got us under their debt and an iron glove. Because if you're in debt to an iron-gloved
foreign establishment, there's just nothing that could be possibly better for the economy than selling out all of your strategic assets to those foreign interests that have you in debt. All right? So that's my first plan to help the economy. The second plan is to shut down the possibility of small business interests by increasing taxes on poorer people while reducing them for the extremely wealthy. And that way, all the extremely wealthy people will be able to buy up all of the smaller businesses and contain a monopoly of control over all business operations and leave everybody else to die on the street jobless. That's also going to help to reduce poverty, because all the people who have been living in poverty for so long will now not be able to feed themselves, and they will die off, and the poverty problem will die with them.
Well, you sound like you've got your policies well worked out, Benny.
Yeah, don't
just
forget
go up there and pretend to be one of them and just like do it with a straight face, you know.
Yeah.
Can you and just imagine
don't,
this?
Well, don't forget really, that's campaign. All that your predecessors have done, and ours in Australia, and certainly Obama over there, everywhere. That's what they all do, what you outlined.
Yeah.
But they just don't admit to that. They sugarcoat it and get all their photo ops and go around smiling with babies and so forth and knocking on doors and lying their asses off so that they can get this access to power.
I know, which would be interesting to see if anybody actually voted for me in the hopes that I'll at least be better at the enslaving them job than the last bunch of scum.
It'll be Python-esque, Vinny. It'll be Python-esque, mate.
And don't forget to campaign
And Vinny Eastwood of the Silly Party.
Oh, no, the Silly Party. Ah. It's actually going to be the Clown Party. So what you do is you first go on there with a red nose on and a wig, and you dress in a tie and a suit with a red nose and a wig, all right? Yep. You go up there and you go, vote for me, everybody, the Clown Party. I'm way less corrupt than the rest of these clowns.
Yeah, you've got an instant slogan there.
Yeah, so it'd be Vinny Eastwood for Prime Sinister, vote the Clown Party.
There you go, folks. In New Zealand, there's a real candidate. You might not be left with just two options this time.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be able to juggle the economy like it was chainsaws and babies.
don't forget to campaign for a politician pay increase and pension increase as well.
Also, all children's birthday parties will be considered a national holiday for clowns.
Well, you got to insert some perks somewhere.
Yeah. There's a great... I will appeal to the clown vote out there.
There was an awesome presidential candidate running in New Hampshire. He calls himself Vermin Supreme.
Oh, yeah.
You should look him up on YouTube.
I have.
He's great, isn't he? He's got a big gumboot on his head. He looks like some kind of dwarf type guy, you know, his big beard and stuff. And he runs on platforms like, I promise that every American will get a free pony.
Well, I would have to give a shout out to our friend and brother in truth, Robbo Diobbo down under, who actually did run for office and put, you know, videos out there and made a good fist of it, actually. And he was primarily wanting decriminalisation of the beautiful weed. But, he's someone that's put a comical tint to the taint of elections.
Yeah, you've got to make a mockery of these guys, you know, these politicians. People... running on joke tickets, I think, is great. They've actually changed the election rules in a lot of states, making it a lot harder for independents and more expensive for independents.
Maybe you guys don't actually get the deviousness of my plan here, because just like a politician, I'm actually lying to everybody about what my policies are. I'm purposely misrepresenting my policies. And the reason why I feel that I can justify purposely misrepresenting my policy is because when you're elected into parliament, it's not illegal to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so...
Even insider trading is welcome in there.
Yeah. So in secret, I will forge up with the collaboration of many co-conspirators, drafts of legislation that will do absolutely draconian things behind people's back, even worse than getting them in debt. there's be three pieces of legislation to sabotage the country. Number one would be the Sinister Act. The Sinister Act would rename all the official references to minister to sinister. So the office of the Prime Minister will be the office of the Prime Sinister. The Minister of Health will be the Sinister of Health, the Associate Sinister of Health, and so forth. All right. Now, the reason for this piece of legislation is to sabotage any possible trust that the public could have in their politicians, hence making them unable to really get any policy passed at any point anyway, because they're scum. And secondly, I will ram through with no democratic accountability whatsoever, forcefully, under urgency, under parliamentary authority, with executive order and all that jazz, completely illegal, but it'll be great. The Suppression of Scumbaggery Act, which will start up a new independent authority that is to be staffed only by volunteers, have zero budget, and only give those volunteers the power to make high-profile arrests of people within corporate, government, and other foreign international entities, right, for the purposes of scumbaggery. If somebody has been known to engage in scumbaggery, they will often be able to buy out the courts, and they'll often be able to buy out the investigators, and so on. Ergo, you need an independent authority staffed by activists and people who are professional scumbaggery exposers who know how to get everything done on just the hint that there is an oily rag to sniff. And you just give those people the authority to walk up to somebody. And if you touch them or you do anything bad to them, then all the system comes down on you. Right? There you go. And also, they'll have the power to arrest people in the judiciary have been corrupted.
Well, someone should.
All right. So there's the first two acts. And then the last act is the Suppression of Any Further Legislation Act.
I like the sound of that.
To prevent any more legislation being introduced in Parliament in perpetuity that suppress and constrict our freedoms.
Love it.
I
hadn't misjudged you, Vinny, as far as that goes. I knew that you were lying and that your lies were had a good motive behind them. And that if by some fluke of alternative universes you were voted in as Prime Sinister, that you would actually do good despite what you say.
Prime Sinister Eastwood, your limo is here. Excellent. Where's my prostitutes? In the limo, sir.
Excellent.
Where's my deputy war on drugs guy to give me some cocaine? Yeah.
Like my public persona would be pretending to be corrupt when the reality is it's actually my wife in the car. So that all of the public thinks that I'm scum, that I'm evil. So that way I'll get voted out, or if I'm lucky, impeached early, because I'd hate to be in a public office position where I've got all rules to follow and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you'd be
but I don't want to break any laws, you know.
And you'd be a little bit concerned if you pushed the envelope so far and no one did anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I really need the media to demonize me in order to raise my profile.
Yes. Yep. Good. That's the good
place. It's actually really, really difficult to get any traction on the so-called media anyway, as you know, Vinny, because it's so policed, it's so screened that they'll only
leave. Why do you think I film all of my own protests and events and public meetings and all of that kind of stuff, bro? All right.
Well, you have to?
Because I know for a fact that the coverage I can give a protester or a public person and so on and so forth will be infinitely better than a whole raft of frickin' mainstream media companies combined. They really can't give somebody – they really can't do somebody justice. They can get a story viewed a million times, but what's bullshit viewed a million times worth?
What's a soundbite of 10 seconds in the context of something that's taken three years to ruin a person's life or something like that, you know?
And I'll never remember, you know. So none of the public will ever remember. I would love to think about ways of controlling the media And I figure the way to control them without actually being draconian and really trying to control what people say and think and do and what have you is becoming anti-media, more or less. I mean, I don't want to be friends with these people.
No.
They're bad people. They're liars. Yeah, they're cheats. Yeah, they're thieves. They're drug addicts. They're ignorant. They're pious,
arrogant.
They're arrogant. They're scum. Okay, you know,
there's no other way to describe them.
Well, I've been there, like yourself, Vinny. I've been a journalist for part of my past life. Anyway, I certainly don't tell many people, but. It's interesting to look back on it, the amount of self-censorship that goes on as when you're in this career called journalism. You're in this little bubble called a newspaper office. You've got your editor who's up from you. You've got sub-editors that are usually up from you and calling the shot on what you've written, writing the actual headlines, changing the slant quite often. And so you know before too long what you can and what you can't write about, who you can and who you can't investigate, so to speak. And it just becomes such a narrow field and narrow mind, that occupation.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of what passes for journalism, there's so many hit pieces out there that are just such ad hominem garbage.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm through playing with these people, okay? I at one point tried to get along with them, tried to have open, reasonable discussions with them, tried to inform them about things and what have you. I'm done doing that. It's war.
Yeah.
Media war.
And better still, you know, there's a perspective of the media, the mainstream media, the lamestream media that's so last century, it's dying and people are switching off from it. You know, more and more people all the time, their readership and their viewership and the advertising revenue and all that stuff is going down the toilet.
Favorite stat I ever heard of to that effect was that primetime Fox News had lower ratings than the Chuck Norris Total Gym commercial with Christie Brinkley.
Well, there you go. That says it all, doesn't it? People, you know, smell bullshit and they don't like the smell and they're tuning out. You know, there's those that still get their opinions from all of that. But, you know, it's usually from, I don't know, in Australia, the ABC or something like that.
It's just people in the establishment that believe this crap. That's the problem, right? Now, I've got to look at it like this. Okay, the longer you're in an indoctrination situation with an authority figure that you have to appeal to and somebody in control of your life, the more inhibited your free thinking abilities will become. The higher you progress up the scale, the more educated you become, the longer you're employed under somebody else who doesn't listen to your ideas and doesn't want to hear your side of it or anything like that, the more stupid rules that you have to keep following, it's like you're shooting half of your brain out, right? So everything becomes either left brain or right brain. Either everything's absolutely logical or nothing within the possible realm even exists at all. You know? It's just ridiculous. It's like what was the analogy I used the other day? It was really good. It's like a champion runner, okay? That's your brain, the left and right brain hemispheres and all of that kind of stuff. Champion runner has two legs. What happens when you go into these higher education things is basically they cut off one of your legs and go and say, run for your life.
Yep. Yeah.
Hop.
And you know, with the media and its plunging revenues and you know, having to cut down even, you know, the quality of journalism from what it was.
Oh, mate, you should see what happened in New Zealand. Like, the communications minister for the current government is Stephen Joyce. Who's Stephen Joyce? Well, he's the former CEO of MediaWorks. What's MediaWorks? The largest private media company in the country. What, you mean the same large private media company that has like $40 million in unpaid broadcast licensing fees because nobody advertises with them anymore? Yeah, that one. The same one that Stephen Joyce personally brokered a Prime Minister's hour at the height of the election, which is illegal, with the proviso that he can't talk about politics as the Prime Minister in the middle of election season on primetime broadcasting. Oh, it's just the first time we've ever done it. Maybe they're not that critical of the Prime Minister because, I don't know, the government gave massive loans to them and now freaking owns them.
Yeah, that's right. That's the way it's going. I mean, most of the so-called private media is still state media, and that's a very good example of it, the conflict of interest and the revolving door going on there. And look, people are waking up to that, and they are looking for alternatives. And there's a huge opportunity there for people like yourself and us and everybody out there who has a journalistic bone in their body to go independent and do some real journalism or talk about real stuff instead of little distractions and, you know, reasoning as to why we need more control over our lives.
Look, there's a tree with a kitty in it.
Yeah.
And it's fluffy.
Distracting crap or making excuses for tyranny. I think people they want to be those that want to be informed, they're turning to other sources, and the internet is coming to the rescue. Now, you know, it has its benefits and its dangers.
There's also the problem with that SOPA Act. Have you heard about that? The draconian copyright law?
Yeah,
there was a lot of companies that were... Did you know Kim.com's house got raided just after SOPA got voted down in the US? You know?
Yeah.
There are a whole bunch of companies, big internet companies that were well behind that legislation and very sympathetic towards SOPA. Mm-hmm. You know? Do you know what you call companies like that?
What's that?
Suck holes.
So pathetic.
So pathetic. Yeah. There you go.
That was it. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I saw that word yesterday or something. Very nice.
Yeah. I like coming up with stuff. You know, I remember one time somebody said, oh, you can't use those two words in that combination. It just doesn't fit. It's like, well, freaking hell, mate. New words come into the English language all the time, okay? Once upon a time, you would see a dear friend on the street, and you would remove your hat and say, good afternoon, dear sir, how goes the morrow? How was your family? How was your work? And today, it's been reduced to sup.
Yeah, or g'day.
Yeah. Funny you should say g'day. I was actually, I experiment from time to time. I do these little social experiments where I'm walking around and I'll like just try to say hello to people to see what kind of a response I get, whether they even look up or respond at all. And this one guy just goes, g'day, mate. like it was almost like he was trying to force out a reciprocal greeting as fast as he could so he could keep walking.
That's as much time as he had for you.
Yeah, get him out.
I know what you mean there. I've had a few of those responses over the years.
Another thing, remember we were talking about like truth isn't how you wake up and stuff like that. And I had an epiphany the other day. You know, I now have a decent sized backyard and what have you. I want to have like a guerrilla media party, bro. It would be great to have like a whole bunch of conspiracy theorists and activists and listeners and people who are like in the know just all coming together. Because have you even noticed that the best freaking conversations you ever have at any party, it's never about the booze, it's never about the freaking music, it's about people and having a real honest, decent, intelligent person in front of you that feels free and open to express themselves and also free and open to listen to you express yourself, you know, that reciprocal kind of amazing thing that you get together.
And isn't dribbling drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah,
over listening to drunks.
Oh, especially because they repeat themselves so freaking much.
That's one of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I find I love stimulating conversation. I love talking to people who are, switched on, and even if we don't think the same things or agree on the same or think that we, you know, have the same solutions and things, that exchange is still really valuable. Even if they're a bit of a statist or whatever, it's still an interesting thing to engage, as long as they're not hostile, of course, you know, as long as they're
name me one conspiracy theorist that you've talked to on the streets, like face to hostile with you for talking about conspiracy theories.
Right, they're generally not, and
in general it's the direct opposite. They're in full-on agreement and are thanking God, I'm not the only one. I'm not alone. This person's not going to abuse me and call me crazy and stuff like that and call me names and deprecate everything and use reductionist logic on my ideas and studies and research and things. Oh, it's blessed.
That's why social networking has been such a gift to us.
Yeah, mm-hmm. not asking you what you've got to hide.
Yeah.
If you got nothing, you got nothing to worry about. If you got nothing to hide.
You know what I really hate is when people call me paranoid. It's like, how paranoid do I sound? Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, considering I know that there's a bunch of ruthless, criminal, sociopathic, pedophile scumbaggery that are about to exterminate me and everybody else, do I sound that paranoid? Even though I know that.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm just having a laugh, mate. I mean, Jeepers Creepers, it's just the end of the world. What was there to worry about?
Lighten up, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's where the human thing comes in as well, because, you know, if you were completely seriously, you know, the hammer's coming down, it's panic time, that's difficult, because people... You know, people don't want to be sort of have their lives thrown into a, like, how much can they do about it and all this kind of stuff. They treat that
as a rhetorical question. Oh, what can one person do? How about this? Don't stop there. Ask yourself,
really,
what can one person do? And, well, it turns out that one person is all it has ever taken to change the entire world. And, indeed, it's the only thing that ever has.
Well, look at the guy in Tiananmen Square as an extreme example, who stopped a column of tanks with his holding his shopping bags,
and got crushed and exterminated along with, allegedly, and this I heard this from a guy who was in China, and this is what the local legend is in that area, that the Chinese government not only exterminated everybody in the square, and it wasn't like 15,000 or something like that, it was like a couple, like 250,000, ridiculous amounts of people got exterminated there.
Wow.
And right afterwards, the Red Guard went into all the homes surrounding the entire suburb, and they kidnapped one person from each family. And they said if they ever wanted to see their family member alive, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Don't talk about it ever to any media, to anybody ever again.
Wow.
Sure enough, nobody knows.
Yeah, right. I didn't know that.
Well, I don't know that either. This is just what one guy who was living in China for a number of years is one of my friend's dads that I had a conversation with one time. You know, it sounds exactly like what the New World Order and Chinese imperialists have done many, many times. I mean, do you think they advertised that Chairman Mao exterminated 80 million Chinese in China in schools? You know, this is Chairman Mao. He's our funder. He's wonderful and he's great. And he exterminated 80 million people, but they were scum, so it's okay. It's justifiable. By the way, if you don't believe it, we have to kill you and take you to a forced labor camp, you know?
Oh, look, it's crazy how people apologize for communism so much. Like they've really got this blind spot with Mao and the Cambodians and the
Lenin
and all the rest. It's like, oh, that was just that wasn't communism, and
not proper communism.
No, we haven't actually tried that yet. But they seem.
I used to parrot that line myself when I was in the midst of my first Marxist degree.
Yeah, and you know, it's they're following the program. They need to kill off all the bourgeoisie in order to create a workers' paradise. You know.
All right. Here's the thing: if you're in favor of socialism, okay, can you name me one socialist republic like that called itself the People's Republic of something that didn't kill or enslave their host population?
Yeah, well, no, I can't. I mean,
not offhand, Vinny, no.
Okay, so that's what socialism does. You either want to be killed and or enslaved, or you don't.
Yeah, because it's the big plan. It's collectivism. It's, you don't fit into our grand plan, so you need to be gotten rid of.
I say we give the grand plan a grand slam. You know,
I agree.
Who cares what these people think? All right, they're wrong. Okay,
you can't
sacrifice. If somebody's wrong and can't be reasoned with, then there's no point arguing with them, is there? And here's the point about self-sacrifice: it's a hell of a lot more powerful than sacrificing others.
Totally, and you know, requiring the sacrifice of others is just pure evil. It's this idea that the individual doesn't matter, and the individual isn't anything special, and you're just a cog in a big wheel, do what you're told and shut up, basically.
Somebody once said that the problem with communism is that eventually you run out of other people's money.
Well, that's right, and that's what's happening, you know, in the US.
But unless you're a bank, everywhere. Because they do say that banks love communism because the government is always running to them for money.
Why wouldn't somebody who profits off of debt love a system that gets everybody monstrously into debt?
Yeah, you've got a captive market there as well, because the conduit of debt is through one central funnel.
Well,
it's interesting to see who set up the Soviet Union or Russia in the first place back in 1917. Who financed Trotsky? It was a guy called Jacob Schiff, who was a pawn of the Rothschild Empire himself. He was the one that put millions of dollars into what's his name? His real name was Lieber Bronstein, or known to the world as Trotsky. He put the millions into his hand, trained up the revolutionaries, and sent them over there to depose the Tsar. And he was a bankster. He was a Western bankster.
Yeah, that's what happens when the shift hits the fan.
Well, Marx himself was a complete hypocrite. I mean,
Have you noticed that that's a genuine theme among commies? You're like, they're total hypocrites. My mate Will Ryan was talking about these hippies that live next door to him, and they're leading all these like foreign weeds and stuff that are like noxious, choking out all the native plant life, grow all over their property, and they're doing nothing but freaking sitting in their house and drinking Coca-Cola, you know?
Yeah, using their iPhones and such, and hating on capitalism, but. Yeah, it's hypocrisy. It's something that, you know, they're holding two ideas in their head at the same time and thinking they're both true.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing, when you don't really question whether or not something makes sense. I mean, just for a moment, question whether or not something in your life makes sense. Does it make sense? Oh, Frank, doesn't make sense. Well, what do you mean? What doesn't make sense? Well, I keep trying to vote for people so that I won't get shafted by the government. Yet they keep shafting me. It doesn't make sense. How does this work?
We keep going back to the ballot box thinking that it empowers us as well. You know?
I contribute like about an hour out of my life once every 4 years to ensure that my country has prudent stewardship. Why isn't that enough, I wonder? Because your beliefs are supposed to govern yourself, you freaking moron. You're not supposed to have these backwards beliefs that are devoted to somebody else's ideology that you don't even understand, haven't even researched, don't even know their policy, and don't even know their name before they start getting advertised on the television, and don't even know their history, their voting record, their work stories, and all of that kind of stuff. You're voting for people whom you don't know at all. And
that's
you
right.
Wonder why you don't understand the reason why the entire country is going in the direct opposite direction that you wish it would go.
And you call them your representative?
Yeah, they're misrepresentatives.
Yes.
Representatives that are female. Get it?
Yes.
And unmarried.
Yeah, so...
married to the mob.
Yeah, I mean, think of a beauty pageant with this kind of thing, you know, like a truth of beauty pageant. Like there's really hot truth of girls out there, like really.
Yeah, you know? not enough of them, but yeah.
Well, there's only, I'd say, like demographics around about 30 to 35% of my audience are female, and... for most talk show hosts of this vein, they're around about maybe 10 to 12% female. Alex Jones has gotten up around 25, 30%, something like that.
It's because you're so pretty, Vinny. You're such a pretty man.
There's a lot of women out there who, you know, would love to, you know, date a truth of man and not have freaking slave scum for a partner, you know? Like a fluoride activist once told me this, it's really hard to meet a girl. And I said, well, you know what we should do, bro? We should set up a dating service for fluoride activists and whatnot so that they can find something. You can call it fluoridate.com.
Yeah.
Nice.
That'd be fantastic.
Look, it's great. I because I have had a bit of an issue, you know, with finding the right woman, and a lot of that's been due to you know, seeing a lot of my friends hook up with women who you know, take the incentive to kick the man out of the house and get the child support, and you know, the state becomes, you know, they have a menage a trois with the state, basically. And I'm not into that. You know, I'm looking, you know, I want someone who
deeper than that.
Yeah, and is kind of on the same wavelength and things like that. I mean, I don't want to compromise too much on my ideas, just, you know, to get sex, and so, yeah, that tends to kind of fall by the wayside, because a lot of women are very statist, you know, and that bothers me. So, you know, putting myself out there online, being honest about who I am and things like that, is kind of open. You know, there's some really,
you know, often
nice women out there who are, you know, into freedom, which is great.
Often it's quite ironic that by really putting yourself out there, you never get in there.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's actually kind of like a painful thing, right? Because society isn't designed to produce women that men like us would like. They have to come to that. They have to come to the conclusion on their own, don't they? So what you're going to be looking for is emotionally damaged, traumatized women who have had a really shocking awakening experience and has high intelligence, high emotional stability, and actually is still really empathetic and caring, more or less, as well as being capable of holding a conversation, holding down a career of some sort, right? You know, an independent, intelligent, caring, loving woman. Isn't that right? Isn't that about right? Sure. But what are you actually got producing? I go to dance parties and stuff like that. Some of my listeners like give me tickets and whatnot. And I see low intelligence. I see a obsession with looks rather than substance. It's form over substance.
Sure.
I see dead end jobs. I see depression and a need to be cared for and catered to at every available opportunity. I see neediness.
Highly medicated too. Yeah, a lot of them. Yeah.
I see weak male role models in the lives of these young women, and I blame the CIA-funded feminist movement for this to a large extent. As a result of breaking up the family, you have many, many maladjusted people out there who don't know what a positive male role model or a positive female role model is. You know what the kind of woman we want is, guys? Old-fashioned women.
Yeah.
Yeah, to an extent, yeah. And yeah, I think you're right. The social engineering has degenerated, you know, society at large.
Well,
so
people
much.
Get their example from the television, and what do the television give us as fucking role models? They give us married with children. They give us those queer guys or not queer guys or whatever, and all kinds of shit. There's you know, there's nothing that presents an intelligent male father figure that is
famous and most loved father figures in television.
Oh, that's a good
one. I don't know, mate.
Homer Simpson.
Ah, okay.
And Peter Griffin.
Yeah.
They're both stupid, fat, crazy,
irresponsible.
Caricatures.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, not checking their privilege and all that.
Talk about monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Know, there's Charlie Sheen, Two and a Half Men, et cetera, et cetera. You know.
Yeah, just irresponsible playboys or what's the word?
Terrible husbands and fathers.
Yeah. Either and submissive. The woman is dominating and you know, the smart one and holds everything together. Well, you know, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but
it can be. Okay, I look at relationships like this. It's like a strand of DNA. Okay, there's a bridge between these two fibers that run up, and they all intermingle and twitch. To put one dominant and one submissive throws the whole thing out of whack. You're going to wind up getting deformities, relationship True. Deformities, problems yep. that don't get solved, fights that brew for 10 years or something like that. Because I think the main thing that we've really forgotten to do, and the main thing which I do not really see on any kind of movies or television, is couples that have a fight about something and then actually have a really, really introspective talk about it.
Resolve
and truly,
it.
Truly express exactly what everything was making them feel, how and why, and how they can get over it, forgive each other and deal with it and continue to love each other. I don't see that ever happening. I've yeah. never seen that happen in a movie.
It's basically promoting dysfunctionality, and that gets reflected by, you know, in society.
Yeah. Which is precisely why I always come back to social engineering.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, counteracting that is a challenge, and finding people that aren't basically affected negatively by it all.
Or become automatons by consuming it so much.
Yeah, yeah, and just accept that as reality. You know, it's pretty horrible.
Yeah. I thought an automaton was like one of those things that they rode around on Star Wars, and you know, in the snow.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. Anyway, it had a nice ring to it, or a nice drum to it.
You know, I just love having fun with stuff, man. I mean, like, everybody suffers from this illness. You know, it's one illness or another. For me, it's narcissism. All right, I love myself, really, really do. Love the sound of my own voice. Love all the stuff that I do, and I think that I'm great. Okay, however, all psychopaths are narcissists. Not all narcissists are psychopaths. Just because I love myself doesn't mean I don't love you too. I'm not a devoted friend and a good husband.
A nice qualification, and I understand that actually, Vinny, now that you've made that qualification. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people beat up on the concept of the ego, and people need to have some ego. There's a healthy ego and an unhealthy ego. Mm-hmm. And a healthy one is you know, you love yourself and you accept yourself for who you are and the reality of who you are, but still have empathy for others and still have love, you know, to share around. Mm. You know, if you consume by yourself and your ego is such that you know, you're the center of the universe, then of course you know, that becomes unhealthy and you don't have much love left over to go around for other people.
Oh yeah, I mean, why do you think I beat up on myself all the time? You know, why do you think I tell a story about the cosmic schmuck, about constantly questioning yourself and make sure you don't turn into what it is you think you're evil, you know?
That's the counterweight to the narcissism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm what's known as a benign narcissist. Now, other people that you could account with that with would be Bruce Lee or Muhammad Ali would probably be a better example. I'm the best there ever is. You will see what I shall see, you know? That kind of thing. Like, totally on, bravado, that kind of thing. And freaking, he was the best there ever was. But unlike everybody else in this world who's been convinced that the ego's a bad thing, he didn't deny his greatness.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And if you can't embrace a bit of greatness in yourself and recognize that, then how can you put it to use?
Yeah. I was just thinking about this. I was having a conversation with one of my listeners today, and he was talking about some other activist or whatever that he thought was like really full of themselves because they wrote their own biography, and it was kind of, and I was kind of like, well, it's funny you should mention that because I was just thinking about writing my own one. And I was just like, I was thinking about all this list of stuff that I'm going to do, like all the firsts in my life, because like what I really love to do is to do things that nobody's ever done for, you know, because I want to leave like some kind of a legacy. I want to actually kind of have an effect through the eons, kind of like ripples in a pond. I want to have so much residual influence, never be able to control everybody or benefit from these gifts that I'm giving out, or whatever wisdom that might help people throughout in the future, whatever inventions that might come because of thoughts that I help people to have, or anything like that. I don't really care about the benefit. I care about the benefit of the future generations who are yet to be born. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think that because I've taken such massive responsibility on to literally literally be the alternative media center in New Zealand, I've become a natural conduit point for everybody. Like, did you ever see the episode of The Simpsons where they go to Australia and the camera pans through the center of the earth rather than following the plane or anything like that? Sure. And the very center of the earth is this many-armed god, I presume it's Shiva or something like that, pressing all these buttons in the middle of the earth, all the stuff going on. And it feels kind of like that sometimes, because I'm really good at hooking other people up of like minds. I'm really good at bringing people together. I'm good at making crowds laugh and stuff like that. I'm good at interviewing people. I'm good at being interviewed. It's just the fact that I'm really, really making a go of this that makes me afraid that I'll someday become something that I despise. And that's actually why I tell people, unlike a lot of narcissists, that I am one, so that they'll see warning signs if I start to go off the rails. Because it's like, imagine if a pedophile comes into your life and you've got children and you don't know he's a pedophile. Would you leave your children with him if you didn't know he's a pedophile? You might. Right? Mm. I'm a narcissist, so you wouldn't want to leave me to my own devices and give me an infinite unchecked power and stuff like that, because I'll likely abuse it. And this is why I've also come up with all of these little methodologies for keeping myself in check, the self-deprecation, hooking up with people that expose scumbaggery and what have you, because I think if I don't expose the scumbaggery within myself also, there'll be nothing to stop it from consuming me.
Yep. Yeah, and God forbid, we give you the ring of power, because, through that we are corrupted, and it's the ring that's the problem. And, giving people authority that they don't deserve. No one deserves, a level of authority of say, like being a prime minister or something. I really think that is a position that is redundant. It is sinister.
Well, there are only three levels of power. There's the power given to you by God, because he created everything, the power given to you by your parents, because they created you, and the power of yourself, because you create your own life.
Yeah, the only thing you can hope to really control in life is yourself.
And if you've got cerebral palsy, that becomes a bit of a challenge.
Yes. Even without that, yeah.
Well, that's right. It's a challenge in itself. And then to presume that you can control others is just dangerous sociopathy.
Yeah. Well, there's nasty Christian folk who like, if your baby's born deformed or something like that, they say God's punishing you for your sins. It's just like, you cruel, callous, pathetic scum, You don't even know the meaning of the Bible. You probably never even read it. That's another thing that really Fs me off. People who are into mainstream religion and don't actually know what that mainstream religion is supposed to be. They don't even know the lie of what mainstream religion is supposed to be about. They don't even believe that. They don't even know anything about it. Okay. I mean, let's say you were to believe the misrepresentations and what have you in the Bible. This is just theoretical. Okay, I'm not denying the existence of Jesus or anything, but let's say you take the Ten Commandments, all right? Basically all boiled down to one commandment: don't be a dick, right? Is anybody really going to become a terrible person if they follow that one simple rule? Bro, don't be a dick.
The golden rule, I think, is a good one. Do unto others as you treat other people the way you'd like to be treated, to paraphrase,
And there's incredible wisdom and power in all of the words of these texts, provided you don't become a hypocrite, or as I like to call them, hypocristians.
Yeah, and use it as a lever to control people.
Yeah, a guilt switch, I'm just going to make you feel guilty for just being normal and actually having to go through life and learn lessons and accept that we're all sinners and so
making
on.
Making a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but the two things that F me off more than anything else, all right? Number one is being accused of not doing something that I have done. And number two is being accused of doing something that I haven't done. Nothing pisses me off more.
They both get up my goat pretty quick.
Yeah. I remember this one host said that I didn't support her when her kids were taken by the state and I was trying to sabotage the network and all of this other stuff, and that I never stuck up for her for all these psychopaths were coming on, and that I'm just the same kind of psychopath that has come after her in the past. And when I was just trying to freaking And so I produced her the links. I said, look, you're a liar. Here's why. Here's the 2-hour interview that I did with you talking about your kids when you're in the part of it. Here's the interview where I actually talk about that psychopath who messed with your life and tried to destroy him. And here's all the different ads and everything like that I've done for the network for free at no cost in order to help them gain some money so that they can stay on the rails. You're a liar. What you're saying is not true. She blocked me, and I'm her enemy forever.
Oh, dear. Yeah, look, yeah, and that's really sure. tragic. It's tragic because she's caught in, she's caught
denial.
In a vice.
She's swimming in denial.
Yeah, she's caught in a vice. Oppressed, this is, and she's projecting that victimhood on everybody, even those that are trying to help her.
Yeah, exactly. It's like in that movie. Have you ever met Amit Goswami, the quantum activist? No?
Not sure.
There's a great movie called What the Bleep Do We Know About Quantum Physics. And apparently when the brain sees something that it's remembering, all right, let's say, for example, you got cheated on by your husband or something like that, and then you see what you think is your little sister being cheated on with somebody else, right? You know? Yeah. And it turns out that it's just the best man and the one of the bridesmaids. Okay, getting it on. Now, the thing is, your brain didn't know the difference. Your brain can't tell the difference between what it's seeing and what it's remembering. Yep. That's a very important lesson. You've got to sometimes stop yourself. And I think Ice Cube said it best. You've got to check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's quite a few other Ice Cube quotes that don't quite, aren't very good. But anyway, yeah, that's a good one. And that's right. People do, when they suffer trauma, this is a big one, where the cycle of abuse, you know, a lot of the abused become abusers. And, once they've suffered abuse, when they end up in a similar situation where the roles are reversed or could be reversed, they kind of play out that darkness, you know, and it's just terrible how that happens, and it's a very hard cycle to break, and it involves a lot of projection as well. You know, you're remembering, like you say, elements of trauma in your past and then applying it to the present, where you've got to disassociate the two and see reality for what it is, that, you know, you're not in the same situation as before, or you know, that person isn't that the abuser of your past. And it's really difficult for people to deal with. I mean, any abuse that I've suffered, I've somehow not then turn around and become an abuser. I'm very thankful that hasn't happened to me.
Wasn't into the realms of traumatic enough to split your mind, so to speak.
Yeah, and then take on that.
Because that is the basis of all that mind control programming that is at the heart of CIA skullduggery and scumbaggery, is selecting young people, usually around before their age of 3, subjecting them to trauma so that their mind can't handle it. It fractures their mind so that they can be controlled in different ways.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main tenets of mind control, and you'll see this in medical school, boot camp, law school. There's a whole lot of different methodologies in order to break the mind down. And the first thing that you'll notice is, in order to break down cognitive ability, you need to deprive sleep.
Yeah, right.
Have you ever seen a law student or a medical student or a first aid grunt soldier who looks like they're well rested? No.
No, that's dead.
Hey, because you can't reason when you're tired as hell, can you?
No.
And so what better state, if you're trying to control what people think, than sleep deprived, eh? Yeah. No. all those people that say that vaccines are bad for you are just crazy. Look at all this manufactured documents and evidence. You don't think this. You don't think to yourself, oh, well, maybe these people actually just made up all this evidence. Maybe they excluded people from the trials. Maybe they did that. You just go, okay.
It's like I said the other day, some of the blindest people in the world are paid to be that way.
Yeah. I'm just wondering like how much sleep deprivation did I go through when I was going to high school and I was like staying up late and then having to get up and go to school real early in the morning. I was late fairly regularly. Mm. I really didn't get too much sleep in high school. I think maybe that's why they do school so early in the morning, so you get used to that slave time frame before your brain's even awake.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, timetable is part of it for sure, Vinny.
Yeah, bro. And then there's also one of the elements, I think teenage minds don't actually get like active properly until about 11 o'clock in the morning, right?
Right.
So naturally, you got nearly half your school day gone before then.
Mm. I've got to say, I did sleepwalk through a lot of school.
Yeah, I started drinking coffee at 15. I would bring an entire giant thermos with me. This is why I maybe continued to drink far too much coffee today and had to actually come up with a new word to describe myself, as I described to you earlier off air, is that I'm a caffeined.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Look, my brain doesn't switch on until I've had my first coffee. I've got to get the jolt, you know, jolt myself into consciousness.
Well, I'm a reformed caffeine, but I still like a drop.
Mm.
Yeah, good on you. Yeah, and you've been getting into the magnesium chloride to get an equilibrium going there.
Oh, well, it's a detox, David. A big pharma basically had me for 20 years with a gun at my head saying, you must take these pills. You must take these pills. You are an epileptic. If you don't take these pills, you will shake and scare everyone away.
Yeah.
And I wasn't epileptic. I just had magnesium deficiency because I drank too much piss as a teenager. It's
a
trip, you know.
Yeah, straightforward like that, eh? Magnesium's really good for you, even better than equilibrium and even better than Elysium.
yeah, it's amazing stuff. It really is. There's so many problems of the body that get solved by getting enough of magnesium. And highly recommend that.
Many actual conditions that are called this or that actually are just manifestations of magnesium deficiency.
Yeah, or other deficiencies. Nutrition.
That's how you tell if a disease is caused by a deficiency. You just starve an animal of a particular nutrient and you see what disease accrues. And if you return the nutrient, the disease doesn't accrue no more, does it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I haven't had any medication in 7 or so years anyway.
Well, from your mental state of being, it sounds like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty clear. Yeah.
Yeah, he's not too addled these days, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And of course, have you ever noticed that that's one of the things that people will tell you if you tell them a conspiracy theory? Like, oh my God, but hey, bro, there's scumbaggery or there's some kind of fluoride chemical in the water that'll lobotomize your ass. And then you're like, nah, you need to get back on your meds. Really?
That's one of the first ones,
mate.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
Chestnut, I hate that.
A total chestnut.
It's like, oh, I forgot to take my suicide-causing, homicide, rampage, afflicting, frickin' chemical poison that's made of half fluoride, half something else today. Yeah. Damn.
Thank you for reminding me.
You just saved my life.
And yours, maybe.
My vision's verging on 2020. I need to unbalance myself again.
Yeah, my vision's verging on 60 minutes.
our broadcast is verging on twice that, I guess, and so we must to accommodate your upcoming broadcast with a good doctor, also called Barry, not Sotero, and for us to do some other things while the sun shines such as it does, I guess we better wrap this up soon, guys.
All right.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you coming on, Vinny, and having a wrap with us. Us truthers, broadcasters, new media people need to stick together and network. I'd love to do some things with you and definitely want to share a lot of what you're doing with others. We've got a lot of people following what we're doing and we'd love to share your activities, because you seem you're certainly doing a lot. You're putting in a lot of hours. I wish I could put in as many hours, you know, because I've got a day job and all that kind of stuff. But I just
call them slave jobs.
Yeah. I do work for myself, which is a bit of a bonus. I've gotten to that point. You know, I'm self-employed. doesn't mean I've got tons of time to spare, but yeah.
Who does?
Exactly.
Ah, but if we do not take time, how can we ever have it?
Well that's right. You've got to make time, really. If you want to get stuff done, you've just got to make the time to do it.
Yeah.
And we do mainly a weekly show. We've stepped it up a bit, though. We seem to have a lot going on at the moment. Do you have a website, Vinny?
I have several.
Okay.
In particular?
You can search Vinny Eastwood on Facebook. That'll be good. And Guerrilla Media with one R on Twitter. TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood doesn't go ahead, make my news. And... GuerrillaMedia.co.nz and the USIndependent.com as well. I'm a contributor to that with the wonderful Suzanne Posel, and also my YouTube channel. If you search Vincent Eastwood, it's under that name, but the web address is youtube.com/ either Vincent Eastwood or Mr. News, MR News, Guerrilla Media. Again, they're not to be confused with GuerrillaMediaNetwork.com, which was a scumbag called Pete Santilli who stole my idea. But, yeah.
All right. Well, that's great. So you've got quite a presence out there. And, keep doing what you're doing. I love your energy and your sense of humor and the way you're approaching all of this. I definitely take on board, your perspective and... The many hands make light work. You know, the more of us out there, the better. It's not like we're kind of in competition, but it's friendly. And
I'd say more in collaboration. More
collaboration.
Community.
Yeah, that's a better thing. You know, we compete for eyeballs, but man, you know, I want people to look at your stuff too. So that's the way I see it. We need to. What we're really in competition with is the lamestream media.
Yeah.
The media that's so last century, the propaganda machine that's out there. And,
well, it's like I always say, bro, you know, it's on the points that you agree that you can come together and collaborate, because on the points that you disagree, you could argue about endlessly. And I say we could probably save those arguments for another time, preferably a time when we're not about to be ruthlessly exterminated by a bunch of criminal scumbags.
Yeah, that's right. It's like,
does that sound reasonable?
It's like time enough for crap on and on later, right?
People arguing about, what system we need to have are overlooking the fact that the one that we've got is extremely dangerous, and we need to turn away from it. We need to repudiate it first, and then we can all get into the niceties of do we have a direct democracy, do we have leave me aloneism, anarchy, or whatever.
It's just one, you know, we need one word that has been vanished from the human freaking vocabulary for a long time. It's only two letters. No.
Exactly, no, I love that word.
Freaking no. All right, and it just comes down like that old 60s speech, because sometimes the function of the machine becomes so odious and makes you so sick at heart that you can't even passively participate, and you've got to throw your body on the levers and on the gears and on the wheels, and you've got to make it stop.
Yeah, and it all starts, and it's very simple. You don't need any government forms. You don't need permission or anything. There's no real process involved other than – in your own mind, declaring your independence. Just say, I, David Lopez, declare my independence. Done. It's done.
Yeah. Then I swear eternal vigilance against all forms of scumbaggery, foreign, domestic, and interior of myself.
Exactly. So anyway, yes, this has been great, and thank you very much. We've got to do it again sometime. Love to come on your show sometime, maybe, if I can get a little invite. Have a great day, and... keep on trucking.
Yeah.
Keep up the great work, Vinny, and thanks for the interview, mate. It's been great fun.
All right. Thank you, guys. You've allowed me a wonderful platform to appreciate myself a whole lot more.
And we've got a whole lot of backslapping for you as well.
All right. Fantastic.
Take it easy, bro.
See you, mate.
See ya. Yeah.
A man dies once, but a coward dies a thousand deaths.
And you must know how to step with no power left.
Those were the words of the prophetess of the powerless that she professed. We became incensed, set upon a quest. Totally entrenched in every flow that we dispense.
Any foe will be a cinch, cause we know that we've been sent.
By the divine, universal mother and father to rhyme. We pre-millennium MCs are far behind.
So be off the mind, the holy mic, it's only right. Hieroglyphic mics of the round table can hold it tight.
Keep it stable, collecting scriptures and secrets. Projecting a cohesive beam like graviton with the avant-garde. Hyro is dope, ask God.
And evildoers on the mic, you have done your last fraud.
This ain't no practical joke or anti-factual hoax, but something each breath in my alveoli sax will promote.
Opposing issues will be stomped in the process or taken hostage until it is accomplished and you can't stop us.
Draw down the drawbridge, cross the moat, let's go. Hieroglyphics adventures in the twilight zone.
Rumor has it in a faraway land, the enemy's partly a devil and he's partly a man. Now we on a crusade and I got a new blade from the blacksmith, plus some chainmail that fits my frame with. Three nights walking, nights talking for the holy might, draw sun up to nightfall. Despite all efforts from the sacrilegious interlopers, mountains, snow swamps, even bridges we will venture over. We were amazed it took only a mere 360 days on foot. Now we better be brave before we enter the cave. If we don't, our people will either be dead or be slain.
I got a vague feeling he's here somewhere, feeding off rage, villainy, tears and fear. Hobnobbing with hobgoblins, drinking blood out of golden goblets, waiting for us to throw the gauntlet and start some conflict so they can locate and squash it. Lest we stay cautious, remember our spells only kept the strongest on parchment. Excellent swordsmen and marksmen whose souls have been tarnished but still escape the demon's harness, treading intrepidly upon a cornice. So many mornings, noons and nights, no snoozing, following the northern lights. Does this holy mic really exist, or is I risking my life following visions? The night's got my back, original is black. I keep thinking that it strengthens my attack. We raise the final sack, tributing, then start up the stone stairs to the inner sanctum to do our duty.
Yeah, we're prepared to shed blood and die as martyrs for the round table. If we just happen to get slaughtered, then part boiled to deep the soil. Her royal highness was broiled alive in turpentine, right in line with the serpentine. Serves to die first, the whole oligarch was torn apart before the dark ages eclipsed the plague. So the holy scepter, known as the microphone, will be in sole control. We didn't fold the scroll that told us where to go. Through the mongrels, the concrete jungles, swift within the man from Uncle, with swashbuckling feet shuffling, acrobatics attack with titanic force, back and forth, trading slashes and dashes. The torch dwindled, then rekindled with flashes. Right again, then I put my scimitar right up in him, venomous, like a scorpion sting, retrieved the age old relic. Now I'm back to the round table.
All night, all day, all day, you say, in vain, trying to find out who say, hieroglyphics on the conquest with me. For the holy light, you take. All night, all day, you say, in vain, trying to find out.